I'd like to call the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water to order and welcome everyone for being here. My name is Vic Gilliam. I'm the co-chair, and I'm sitting next to my other co-chair, Representative Cannon. And this is our first substantive meeting, and we're pleased to get underway. I wanted to announce that if you didn't know, I had Jefferson Smith removed because I don't really like him. That's not true. Jefferson Smith has been assigned elsewhere. I think he had a conflict in schedule, and we are fortunate to have Representative Brad Witt join us, who, unfortunately, is ill today. But just so you know, that's the roster. We're waiting for one more representative, but we have a quorum, and we're going to begin. Just so you know, the way this, we've never done this co-chair thing before. We've decided to, unless there's an issue that either one of us is particularly attuned to, we're going to alternate. And so I will be the chairing, I will be the presiding officer for Tuesdays and Thursdays, and Representative Cannon will be Sunday mornings. I'm Tuesday, he's Thursday. So welcome. If you'll bear with me on the schedule, we'd like to first, and I'll open it in just a second, have a public hearing on 2121. Then we're going to take a break. We'll keep that hearing open. Then we'll hear 2189, go back and finish 2121 because of some folks that are in another committee testifying. So I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2189. And I'd like to first call Paulette Pyle and then others after her who are interested in testifying on this bill. What did I say? 2121. Okay, we have our first mistake. Like I said, I'm closing the public hearing. Now that I've opened it, Kim, what do I do?
You just recess that public hearing.
We're going to recess 2189. It's going to get better. He's enjoying it.
We're on recess already. Go out of 90 seconds.
This is what you get when you lower the cost at the legislature.
I don't think we've recognized you yet.
I didn't think you
and
would.
I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2121, and that's the one I'd like Paulette Pyle to come forward and kick us off on 2121.
Okay. Let me do this. I'm going to turn it over to somebody else. You're still not quite on target. But that's okay. For the record, my name is Paulette Pyle. I'm Director of Grassroots for Oregonians for Food and Shelter. And this is a bill, Representative, that we were going to have the Department of Agriculture talk to you about and explain to the committee why it's introduced by them. And then we would work with them and bring things back to you later. So if it's okay, we'll turn it over to the Department of Ag.
That's just fine. Thank you for that. I need all the help I can get. So.
Maybe we might prefer to go with the director of DEQ. So,
on 2121?
Yes. I think they have a co-testimony that they pulled together.
Okay. So that's all we needed?
Yes, we just recess.
Before I recess this bill, is there anyone that would like to testify and get the heck out of my committee room? If not, bearing with me, we are going to recess House Bill 2121, and now reopen House Bill, a hearing on House Bill 2189. Now, Representative Bentz, can you bring some order to this?
Sure.
Thank you.
Co-chair, a matter of order. Do we refer to you as co-chair or chair or something else?
I don't think I've earned either yet.
So hey, you.
It's your choice.
Mr. Co-chair, for the record, Cliff Benz, Representative District 60, and I appear before you today to support HB 2189, which is a bill that would make a modest change to our fill and removal statutes. The concept is this. I've given a picture of Halfway Oregon, which I would ask the committee administrator to pass around. And it's this small valley that is in my district, the northernmost point, actually. And there was a flood event, and there's, of course, no dams or other devices to stop rock and other debris from coming off the Eagle Cap Mountains down through those valleys. When this happens, the ditches that are in place to divert water to the meadows that you see in that photograph fill up with rock, and many times the stream itself moves away from the point of diversion. And so the ranchers that joined me and Director Saladay went to numerous of these points of diversion, looked at them, and realized that a lot of rock and gravel would have to be moved to reinstate the systems of water diversion. Of course, in order to do this, there's fill that's going to have to be removed from the ditch and also from the area where the original point of diversion was and now where the stream, the point to which the stream has moved. The statute as written does not specifically allow this, although I guess under a strained reading, a good Eastern Oregon lawyer could probably figure out a way of making it work. But no one can afford good East Oregon lawyers, and therefore this change is enthusiastically embraced by all of my ranch clients. The idea would be that we would allow folks to reestablish their points of diversion without the need of obtaining a permit, and that's what this modest change suggests, and I support it, and I understand that someone from Division of State Lands is here to fill in some of the gaps in my explanation. Questions?
Any questions of our colleague?
Is it possible to get the good representative to escort a tour out here to view this? It looks like pretty nice territory. I mean, field trip on site, you know?
Yeah, it does look beautiful.
Yeah.
In the spring.
Yeah,
yes.
In the spring.
Anybody else?
For road trip.
Thank you,
Representative.
So we would like for our representative from State Lands to come up, Bill Ryan.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gilliam and members of the committee. For the record, I am Bill Ryan. I am the Assistant Director of the Department of State Lands in charge of the Wetlands and Waterways Conservation Division. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2189. As Representative Benz stated, the bill would exempt from the removal fill law relocation of surface water diversion structures where that relocation is needed to adjust for the movement of the waterway. So basically when a stream or a creek meanders as a result of a flood event, being able to extend or shorten the ditching going up to that structure and then putting that structure in place there in order to adjust to the change in the river channel's location. The department asked Representative Benz to sponsor that legislation following our experiences out there in Baker County as a result of the flooding last June. As the representative stated, the very extremely heavy rainfalls resulted in flooding, which resulted in meandering of those channels, and many of them migrated away from the existing points of diversion for the waterways. And in working with the agricultural landowners out there to address their needs, the department became aware that a relatively simple change in the statute would address their needs and basically reduce the regulatory burden upon those landowners without compromising protection of the water resources in the area. The current exemptions for the removal fill law don't cover that specific situation. There's an exemption for constructing, operating, and maintaining dams, but it only covers fill at this point, so it's basically for the filling in or construction of a dam, but it would not cover excavation such as extending a ditch line. And so that current exemption doesn't really cover that circumstance. There's also an exemption for maintenance or reconstruction of water control structures, but it doesn't specifically address relocation of those structures. And so that's where this particular situation kind of falls in between those two specific exemptions. So the proposed legislation would provide a clear exemption for that relocation required to adjust to the change in location of the channel. There's little potential for adverse effect to waters of the state for the activities covered. Basically, we're talking pretty minor changes in lengths of ditches. When these streams move, they tend to not move that far. And if they did, it basically would not move through waterways and through wetlands. So in general, the potential for effect is pretty minimal. And so requiring a permit process to do that relocation really doesn't provide benefit to the state in terms of protection of resources. The fiscal impact would be minimal to the agency. We do very small numbers of this type of permanent activity, less than 10 per year, and because of the small volumes of removal of fill associated with those activities, the permit fees generally are in the $85 to $250 range, so we're not talking a lot of money. So basically very minimal impact to the department fiscally. So in summary, the legislation would reduce the regulatory burden without compromising the water or protection of water resources and would have negligible fiscal impacts for that legislation. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I'm open to asking any questions or answering any questions.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Kocher.
It's a question. It might actually be for Representative Benz. I think it's definitely a legal question. I'd be interested in your answer as well. Is there a risk at all that by establishing a clear but narrow exemption like this, we suggest in the law that if one has a situation that doesn't fall under one of these clear but potentially narrow exemptions, then the answer is no, rather than using a more interpretive approach that would allow these to be dealt with under sort of the spirit of the statute as opposed to these discrete narrow exemptions?
Mr. Co-Chair, I think my response would be that the clearer we can keep the statute, the better. And sadly, that does lead to more and more and more specific statements of how it should apply. But I'm sure there's a line that we are going to, I don't think we've crossed it yet with this statute, although pretty long list of specific exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
With points of diversion and with water rights, the clearer you can keep things, the better. And so I'm in favor of clarity in lieu of, shall we call it, subjective enforcement.
Other questions? Thank you for your testimony. Just to be clear, then when you have an issue of sort of just meandering, a meandering issue, Representative Benz is the first one you think of. If you'll hold on just a second, Ron Paul's here, and I don't think he has testimony, but you're available, is that right? Do we have any questions for Mr. Paul? If not, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
So with that, if no one else would like to testify on this bill. Which I think others do. Come forward. Oh, Mr. Engstrom, would you like to testify? Is there a Katie Fast in the room?
Oh, go check it out.
Come forward. All right.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Gilliam and Chair Cannon. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau. The Farm Bureau would like to give our support to House Bill 2189. While this may seem like a minor tweak in the statute, it's very meaningful for the ranchers in Halfway and other areas that face this issue with meandering waters. And being able to access diversion points for irrigation is critical for our ability to make profits on farms and ranches, and so we would ask for your support of the legislation. And I am able to answer any questions if you'd like something in more detail.
Any questions?
Thank you.
We're checking on one other, Mr. Angstrom. He might be in another room. So,
do I have to? I think so. Okay. He is.
We're going to stand at ease just for a second. Mr. Angstrom, we're eager to hear from you.
Good afternoon. My name is Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. What a way to start the legislature. I have a bill going on in the other committee on the Senate side and one here, and I signed up on both. And mine was supposed to be first up there, and it's now last, so I made it back down here. I just wanted to talk about in support of 2189, and but on a it's kind of a minor bill, really, from a our perspective, where there may be some river change and a point of diversion that we're pulling water out. We need to reestablish our pump or something of that nature. But what I do want to emphasize, and the reason I wanted to testify on kind of a small bill in support of it, is kind of the move from the state agencies that I see working together and reducing the permitting processes on the regulated community. And it's a theme that I think you're going to see over and over in bills. I have another one coming that accomplishes kind of the same thing. And it's the kind of thing that I want to encourage the legislature to adopt, is to try to reduce the duplication in the permitting process. It costs us a lot of time. It costs us a lot of money. But on the other side of it is it costs the agencies, every time they have to look at something, it costs them hours and time as far as FTEs are concerned. And even though this is a small bill right out of the outset, it sets the appropriate flavor, I think, for the session and the kinds of things that both the industries and the agencies and hopefully the environmental community can embrace of making a very technical review process of various processes rigorous. But let's reduce the number of looks and the duplication of it. And, you know, with that, this is a good bill. It has a very small, minor impact to us, but it's the right trend, and OCAPA is in support of it. So, and I apologize for being late. It's just I can't believe the first bills, you know. I got two committees.
Believe me, you didn't see the first part of this. You have nothing to apologize for. you know,
glad you said that.
I know. Well, I knew you were going to, Mr. Co-Chair. I mean, Mr. Co-Vice Chair. Got a lot of Cocos here, so it's kind of difficult. Appreciate your testimony, and I understand you weren't here because you were juggling. But to your one of the points you made, you missed the testimony from Bill Ryan, where he, talking about permits, said revenue loss for this bill that would be offset by the cost savings in not administering the permits. So yeah. I think you reinforce a point that was made earlier, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and that's just on the agency side. And then, you know, obviously we want to be cognizant of what the costs are to business, Mr. Chair, because it really is becoming a barrier to business in Oregon, the level and extent of the regulatory scheme. And I'm not trying to say it shouldn't be highly technical and rigorous. I'm just saying we got to get the number of touches down, and it'll help everybody.
Any questions for Mr. Angstrom?
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Any others that would like to testify on this bill, please?
Co-Chair Gilliam and Co-Chair Cannon. I am Jim Welsh with Oregon Cattlemen, and I wasn't going to give testimony, speaking of reducing touches, but I thought possibly we better, as cattlemen say, we would be supportive of this. Good bill should pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Welch? There's no one else. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2189 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2121. And I'd like to ask Dick Peterson and Lisa Hansen from DEQ and Ag, respectively, to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs. Yes. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dick Peterson, and I'm the director of Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality, and here to talk to you about House Bill 2121. A little bit of background. It was in 2009 or thereabouts where the federal courts ruled that the Clean Water Act has jurisdiction over the application of certain pesticides on or over water, meaning that EPA would require a permit for those kinds of activities. And being that Oregon is a delegated program for that, then we have to implement that responsibility under the federal program. And why we're here today, Deputy Director Hansen from Oregon Department of Agriculture will fill you in, but the model here is that we want to work it so that ODA is really the on-point agency for dealing with this permitting function. We think it's a great model. They have experience in this area, and we also have experience through the confined animal feeding operation that also requires a permit from the state that's required in the Federal Clean Water Act, the CAFO permits that ODA implements on the ground, and they're doing a great job of it, and I think this can follow that model. And so I just want to be here to, number one, lend support to this approach and lend support to the Oregon Department of Agriculture being the implementing agency for this, for carrying through with this responsibility under the Federal Clean Water Act. So with that, I'll turn it over to Deputy Director Hansen.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and I want to visit with you a little bit about House Bill 2121. As Director Peterson explained, we're here bringing this bill to you as a result of a court-ordered action in the Sixth Circuit Court back in 2009. And traditionally, the application of pesticides has been governed through federal regulation known as the Fungicide, Insecticide, and Rodenticide Act, FIFRA, and carried out by the Oregon Department of Agriculture through ORS 634, which is our state pesticide laws. So we traditionally have looked at it in the most simplistic terms prior to this court decision that if pesticides were applied according to the label, they were used according to the law. With the Sixth Circuit Court decision, it was determined that the application of pesticides into and near water and their residues would be considered pollutants. And as pollutants, then, they are governed under the Federal Clean Water Act. That's a very simplistic explanation of it, but that's the general backbone of why we're here today. As a result of that court order, ODA and DEQ have, I think we visited with the interim committee back in May to talk about this, but we worked together to develop a plan initially to implement these NPDES permits for the state of Oregon, carrying out in our natural roles. We're required to have the permits in place in April of 2011. So initially, DEQ will administer the permit. ODA has been doing education and outreach. Simply, what Senate Bill 2121 does, if it were to pass, would allow ODA to carry out all of the functions of administering the NPDES permit for this specific
use. And you meant
use.
House Bill 2121.
House Bill 2121, yeah. Yes, sorry.
They get enough over there, so go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, thank you.
Sorry.
It would allow ODA to jointly issue the NPDES permits with DEQ to do the enforcement, carry out the program, as well as charge fees for the program. So it would be housed within ODA in our pesticides program, pulling all of those functions of pesticides together. We have a natural linkage with the individuals that will need this permit through our licensing program. So that's, I think, by way of background why we're here. I can tell you there's been a great deal of uncertainty around this permit and its implementation. As of today, EPA still hasn't provided their final permit for the states in which they will administer the NPDES permit. There is some concern and uncertainty around the definitions that are used to pull pesticides into the Federal Clean Water Act, that being biological materials and chemical waste. So I think you likely will hear from some people that still has concern to them in terms of the terminology and how the Sixth Circuit Court decision has changed how these products are used in, near, and over water. So with that, I'm open to answer any questions.
I have a quick one here. When I look at the summary, and the two departments would come together, and I appreciate the director's testimony that in the memorandum of understanding, you'd like the Department of Agriculture to be on point. It goes on and it says, it refers to the department. Where is it? Sorry. After it describes both of you going into a memorandum, then it says that provides for departments to operate program. Just to clarify, that means the Department of Agriculture?
That's correct. Go ahead.
Co-Chair Gilliam, that's correct. It would be for the Department of Agriculture to specifically operate the program for the issuance of permits for certain pesticide uses in, near, and over water.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Yeah, okay.
Yes, sir.
Follow up on that. So what would be the role of DEQ then? Because you also described, I think you used the words, operate jointly. Mm-hmm. So I just want to clarify what you anticipate in this memorandum in terms of each agency's roles.
Chair Cannon, one of the issues here is whether there's a full delegation to the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and we're not there yet, so that delegation of the responsibility still comes to DEQ. The memorandum of understanding will really clarify between the two agencies that they're carrying out all the operation of it, but they're not assuming full delegation under the Clean Water Act. That's still DEQ. So in some sense, we still have that responsibility of full delegation for the program from EPA, but by change in statute and the agreement that we have, that responsibility is fully carried out by the Oregon Department of Agriculture, very similar to what happens in the confined animal feeding operation CAFO permitting process.
I have a few other questions, but why don't you go to other committee members?
Just to you, is Department of Ag going to have someone up here after a bit to testify in addition to Lisa? Anyone else besides you?
Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Krieger, if you would like one of our technical experts, I do have them here that can speak to the pesticide law.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to know, it says establish civil penalties that may be imposed. I kind of wanted to know what the formula was that they did with that, and comply with permit fees. I want to know kind of what those fees might be.
Okay. Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Krieger, I can give you an estimate of what we are looking at in terms of fees for this program. ODA and DEQ and working together, it's still unclear exactly the number of fee payers or permittees that will be under this program, but we've estimated about 248. To have the program fully stand on its own on fees, the permit fee charge within the Department of Agriculture would be $1,296 annually for that permit.
$1,296.
Yes. And then to the second part of your question, in terms of the enforcement piece of this, this would allow us to adopt by rule the matrices to enforce it. In our current pesticide law, we have a cap of $10,000 per violation for violations of the pesticide law. And I believe that you have a different cap for... the water quality laws.
Yeah, we'll have to get back to you on the detail of that, Representative Krieger. I can't speak to it off the top of my head, but we can get you all that detail in terms of the different caps.
Anything else, Representative?
Not at this time.
Okay. Representative Camp.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to start with the follow-up on the penalty cap. I would appreciate information on each of your sort of fee structure or penalty structures.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The court decision would, you know, presume that these violations are considered violations of water quality, mm-hmm. and that might lead one to assume that the penalties would look more like the way other water polluters are penalized. That may be, you know, not the policy direction that we want to take as a state, but that would appear to be at least a you know, presumption one might have. And so if that's not the direction we're heading, if ODA's kind of penalty matrix will look quite different than DEQ's penalty matrix for water quality violations, then I'd be interested in knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
Question on the definition, chemical wastes and discharges of biological materials, is that category broader than just pesticides? I mean, the focus of the decision, and I think the focus of the legislation, is pesticides, but the definition here, to a layperson, appears to be broader.
Co-Chair Cannon, so my understanding of this is it ties back to the Federal Clean Water Act, and the Federal Clean Water Act does not specify pesticides, and this was the place in which pesticides fit in best based on the guidance that was provided by EPA in the development of the permit and the guidance that they provided the states to develop the permit. That said, those broad terms, I think you've caught on to, those are clearly troublesome to many people in terms of how far-reaching they may be.
So is it possible then if we moved forward with this legislation and then a memorandum and development of a program that it would in fact catch a broader set of violators than merely the regulated entities than merely the pesticide using community?
Vice Chair Cannon, I believe it's narrowed to the application of pesticides that were covered normally under FIFRA, and I think one of the definitions or defining parts of this is on or near water, and so it's more of a physical application than it is a chemical, other than those that are covered by UNFIFRA and used in that manner. That's my understanding of it, and it was the on or near water thing that was the ruling factor in terms of the court decision.
Yeah, go ahead, Representative Krieger. Then
on a minute. Representative Bence is next.
Okay, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In reviewing Section 3, am I correct in understanding that that is lifted from some other language, some other place? Where did that language come from, items 1, 2, A and B?
Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Bence. It's my understanding that this language comes from the Federal Clean Water Act.
Mm-hmm. Follow. Thank you. My question, of course, is this is not an expansion. This is a recitation of current standards. That's my question. This is not something we ginned up. It's something we lifted from the Clean Water Act. That's my question.
I'll take a shot. Co-Chair Cannon, Representative Bence, it really is responding to the court case that EPA had to take action that these types of applications needed a permit. And so it's definitely not something we've ginned up. It really is taking what the courts are telling EPA that they have to do, and then EPA is telling all the states, not just Oregon, but all the states that they have to do in terms of coverage under the Clean Water Act.
Well, thank you. So this is something that the federal court has imposed upon all states, not just Oregon. We would find a similar standard in other state legislation.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Vance, that's true.
This is actually on a slightly different tangent. Is the retention of oversight by the DEQ over ag also driven by the EPA, or is that state-driven?
Co-Chair, Representative Bentz, the federal Clean Water Act does not drive oversight of DEQ over ODA. However, we are the delegated program for the Federal Clean Water Act, and so the relationship that we build in terms of the MOA, it's sort of we ensure EPA that the program is being implemented in Oregon, and so I'm cautious. I'm not using a strong oversight as a word. We're passing on the implementation through the agreement, but we're not in what I'd call a major oversight role. I think if EPA had a problem with the way Oregon was running the program, that Oregon Department of Agriculture and DEQ would have to respond in kind to EPA. If they had an issue with what Oregon was doing, they'd probably come after certainly DEQ's responsibility.
I'm just trying to understand if this delegation means we have two people riding the same horse, or do we have a complete delegation, or maybe you can describe for us a little bit how many folks will be checking on what the Department of Ag does to make sure they're doing the right thing. Give us a picture of that.
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Vance, we don't see us having anybody, doing a day-to-day check. We would be available to the Oregon Department of Agriculture if they needed our assistance, but we don't have the resources to, sit at a desk and review what they're doing. The detail of that will certainly be spelled out in the agreement that we have, and that'll be the operating thing. And so, just like the confined animal feeding operations, it's fully within the state given to the Oregon Department of Agriculture to implement.
Thank you.
Did you have another question?
Yeah.
Representative Krieger.
Everybody knows what on water is, but near, and is there some distance like the riparian zone rules or something?
Maybe I'll take a shot, and Deputy Director Hansen can follow up. Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krieger, I think that's kind of one of the gray areas that we're trying to get some guidance from the Environmental Protection Agency, and we're waiting for that, and that's the kind of thing that I don't believe in the current direction from the court, and Lisa can correct me if I'm wrong, or in guidance that we're waiting from DEQ defines that, and so we're waiting for that to see how that will factor into a permitting process that ODA would manage.
If I might follow up on that just a little bit to help expand Director Peterson's explanation. There are basically five categories that we understand from our conversations with EPA that EPA is looking to for issuing this permit. And those include mosquito control and flying insects. So that would be like vector control, basically, to water. Then the next one would be weed, algae control, and animal control. And those, the way I think about them, are like irrigation districts to ditch banks, vegetation control within ditches and along those ditches where water would come in contact with it. Forest canopy for pest control, and then area-wide, and I think a good example of area-wide could be like the Oregon Department of Agriculture's gypsy moth applications to control the invasive pests, where we're doing an aerial application over a wide area.
Just a second, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
We got herbicides, and I've got pest control. But pest control is different than herbicide control of vegetation. So does pesticides include herbicides?
Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Krieger, pesticides is the broad term used for all those things. Besides is how I refer to it, that are used to kill things. So whether it's a herbicide, an insecticide, a fungicide, a rodenticide, they're all pesticides.
Okay. Follow up. Then the permitting thing. Every farmer, rancher, tree farmer like myself, you're going to go out and make application along a road with a backpack, and you've got whatever you've got in there. Are we going to have permits for every one of those things on ag land and forest land?
Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Krieger. As we understand it, with the current definition, this is a pretty narrow scope of who will need the permits. So irrigation districts, vector control districts, state agencies doing those type of area-wide applications that I indicated before, animal abatement within a pond. So this currently, and then also forestry applications. So currently they're looking to those applications, and it doesn't appear that it's going to apply directly to farmers unless it is within the irrigation type canal where it would be to a water.
You mentioned forestry. So is ag and DEQ going to be taking over some portions of the Forest Practice Act or enforcing those different than what is in the forest practice rules now?
Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Krieger. Currently, ODA has the authority to implement the state pesticide law as well as the federal pesticide law. And we take enforcement actions or aligned with forestry, and that's separate from the Forest Practices Act. And so this does not look to change the Forest Practices Act. It would only require a permit for certain uses, as I indicated previously, in near and over water.
If I might add,
and I have some real grave concerns that I want to talk to industry about, and small woodlands and others, before I'll sign on to this at all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative. Do you have another comment?
Oh, no, I was just going to add, Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Krieger, that we'll be looking at a general permit concept where, you know, there'll be a general permit to cover a whole bunch of things, and there'll be authorization to that. That's one mechanism of permitting that's not individual permits, if you will. So that's something we'll be looking at, too.
Check in.
Thank you. Co-Chair, do you know whether other states are taking this approach of sort of delegating responsibility for this program to their departments of agriculture? I know every state regulates differently, but is this the approach that others are taking in response to the decision?
Co-Chair Cannon, I don't have that information. We were actually talking about that earlier today, anticipating we might get that kind of question. And I don't believe up north the state of Washington is doing it that way. We're going to look into that. It has nothing to do with our desire to do it this way. But I believe that up in Washington, ecology, who is my counterpart, will remain the permitting function in the state of Washington.
Interesting. Have the fiscal aspect of this, have you built this into your budget, the ODA budget, Deputy Director?
Yeah. Co-Chair Gilliam, Co-Chair Cannon, yes, this is built into the agency's budget in terms of a policy option package.
Okay. And finally, am I correct to think that if we failed to pass this bill, the consequence would be the DEQ would be required to administer the program, that the regulated entities, namely these applicators, pesticide applicators, in addition to having to work with ODA, would have to go to a separate agency, DEQ, in order to conduct these activities?
Co-Chair Cannon, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you both for your testimony. I'd like to call up Terry Witt and Katie Fast.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Terry Wood. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I think listening to the comments from the members of the panel, I think it's pretty clear that there is a lot of confusing language in this bill. And this is a major concern that we have, that there are some interesting definitions in the bill, and we think some very overlapping definitions. For example, when we're talking about residual pesticides, applied near water that find their way into water, that's a non-point source from my definition. When we're talking about residual pesticides that remain in water directly applied to the water, that would probably fit more in a point source as defined by the Talon irrigation lawsuit. And so when you start combining these things and dealing with combinations of Clean Water Act definitions, calling pesticides chemical wastes or calling biological pesticides biological materials, and then having what I consider to be somewhat of a convoluted bill, it sometimes is very difficult to really untangle. We're in the process of trying to do that with people that are a lot smarter than I am on this particular subject, and we're working with DEQ and ODA to try to sort these things out. And I think as Deputy Director Hansen had mentioned, one of the things that is important to recognize is that this is kind of a moving target right now, because we really don't have the final permit language from the U.S. EPA, and that may, in fact, help us define some of these issues. And as Representative Krieger was talking about, some of these applications that are typical in terms of forestry or agriculture, EPA is talking about having some significant thresholds, in other words, below which you are not required to have a permit. And so until we see all those and actually have all those sorted out, I think it's a little premature to kind of pass a piece of legislation like this that has some embedded definitions. And so I think I can say with clarity that we fully support keeping the authority for regulating these materials within the ODA. They have the expertise and are currently doing that job, and they work in conjunction with the Department of Forestry so that they do, in fact, enforce the pesticide labels, and the Department of Forestry enforces the forest chemical rules. So they are working in that cooperative arrangement, and like some of the other issues, like confined animal feeding operations, there is a good nexus between ODA and DEQ. We just hope that we can get some of the minor details nailed down before we finally pass this law. And I think, as was mentioned, the fiscal price tag of this is not necessarily minimal. It's we're looking at $600,000 or so during the biennium. So there is some significant finances involved. If we're going to be charging a permit fee to some of our operators of $1,300 a year, that may be the tipping scale in some cases that really provides some uneconomic situations. So I think we need to kind of look those through. But on the surface, we're supportive of the concept of an MOU between DEQ and ODA, and we'd like some additional time to work out the details.
Terry, thank you for that. And just before Katie starts, I wanted to ask you, in your mind, the kind of information that you're hoping for or waiting for from EPA, for instance, I'm not holding you to this because you're not part of that department, but what's the timeline you see when that kind of information will be available?
Co-Chair Gilliam, I believe the time frame we're looking at is a matter of weeks, less than a month.
And you obviously have worked on this issue and are willing to continue to do so with both departments. Is that correct?
Mr. Co-Chair, that's correct.
Okay, good. Unless there's questions for Mr. Witt, I'm going to move on to Kate. Go ahead.
Thank you, Co-Chair Gilliam. For the record, again, Katie Fass with the Oregon Farm Bureau. As you've heard, Oregon does have experience with delegated authority of the Clean Water Act being administered partly by ODA in terms of the Confined Animal Feeding Operation Program. And it's one that the agricultural community is familiar with and has worked well in regulating an industry and protecting waters. And I think generally we would be supportive of this concept moving forward, because the Department of Ag is the entity that has the expertise and the experience with the products that we're talking about, and also the relationship with the user community. However, due to the issue that we don't have the final permit from EPA, there's some concerning language in this legislation that's been discussed. I would agree with Mr. Witt. We'd like to see this bill held for some time so some of those issues can be worked out, and there's some time to see if this is the right movement for that the state should take. And with that, I'm happy to answer some questions.
Are there any?
Okay, thank you both.
Thank you.
The one thing I would say is, as encouraging as some of this testimony's been, there obviously are concerns that have been expressed. So I hope that the departments will continue the conversation. Obviously, Co-Chair Cannon and I have to talk about the next steps in this bill, and until we do that, I just want to make that encouragement, and we will confer on this. Do you have anything else to Representative Krieger?
You know, I don't know a person in this room or anyone up here that doesn't want to take care of the environment. Over time, we've become more and more aware of the long-term benefit of that. But you have to weigh the cost and how much bureaucracy that you get involved to gain what. As hopefully this group can get together and make sure we do both.
Thank you, Representative. Seeing no other folks interested in testifying on this bill, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2121. And unless there's other business by members of the committee, I am going to close the meeting of the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water. Thank you all.
Gosh, we got through it.
So you ought to go out and buy a drink.